Congressman Dennis Kucinich is with us, and I know, Dennis, it's probably been an interesting few days. I know I, like many others, sat glued to the TV on Saturday and watched a lot of the debate in the House and then watched the final vote. And you did vote against H.R. 3962, the House health care bill. Can you explain why you voted against it?
Yes. It assures the privatization of our health care system by forcing Americans to buy private insurance, a $70 billion a year subsidy to the investor-owned insurance companies. 21 million people are cast into that system. And at the same time, Nicole, while this sellout to the insurance companies is happening, and each and every effort aimed at protecting the public from aggressive premium pricing by the insurance companies was set aside. You know, the single payer was taken off the table immediately. The robust public option was shrunk from its first plan for $129 million down to $6 million. What kind of competition was that going to get for the insurers? And then the amendment that I had in the Education and Labor Committee that was part of the bill was taken out of the bill just days before the vote as a further concession to the insurance interests. I mean, this bill is about insurance care. It's not about health care. And in the end, I think we're still at a position where we have to rally the American people for health care for all and not insurance care for some.
Well, I agree with you fully, and I know so do many of my listeners. Now, we remember it was just a couple of months ago, there was a big single-payer rally in D.C., and I think it was something like 62 or 63 members of the Progressive Caucus, yourself included, all signed a letter to Speaker Pelosi and said that you will vote against any bill that did not contain a robust public option. And when it came down to it, most of your colleagues caved. You and Eric Massa were the only two who held true to that pledge.
Well, I know it's unfortunate that we were not able to hold that coalition together. And I think that, you know, members who wanted to do the right thing were under enormous pressure from not just the House leadership, but from the White House. People wanted to close ranks behind the president. And everyone wanted to be what they perceived to be would be a good Democrat. However, I looked at the bill, and I decided that everything that should have been done in order to protect consumers from the rapacious tactics of insurance companies with their predatory pricing, their premiums, copays, and deductibles, and never quit, everything that could have been done wasn't done. And so on good conscience, I couldn't vote for this. I tried to work out a deal with the White House. I tried to get my amendment back in. They could have had my vote if they would have showed any interest. And you know what really surprises me, and I talked to my wife about this. Elizabeth and I were talking about the fact that the administration and Congress even put abortion back on the table as something to start negotiating rather than put a robust public option forward or the consent amendment that would have really protected people at a state level and their efforts to create a single payer if they so choose.
Well,
that's pretty shocking.
It is. It is stunning. The Stupak Amendment, which was put forth at the 11th hour, it was a jaw dropper. And it's a despicable amendment. I mean, because not only does it say, you know, no federal funds can be used for abortion, but it precludes any woman from participating in the so-called reform, you know, if she wants coverage in the unforeseen event that she might sometime need an abortion. It's just, it sets the women's movement back 50 years.
Well, you know, it was stunning. And, you know, abortion is a very serious matter. I don't know of anyone who actively advocates that another person have an abortion, but women should have the ability to make that choice. And I think that we're at a point in this country where it's possible to have a discussion without people being at each other's throats to understand that we can with prenatal care, postnatal care, child care, universal health care, a living wage, we can create circumstances which are conducive to healing America and making abortions less necessary. And I don't, you know, and that's the kind of goal that people would be willing to work towards. But the problem is that this that this very sensitive issue was thrown into this superheated political climate, and all it's done is to recatalyze this massive fight in America over abortion. And frankly, I consider this a setback for being able to reach some kind of a heartfelt consensus on what we might do as Americans, and not to, you know, to put women's choice on the negotiating table was a pretty stunning move, frankly.
Well, I agree with you, and the president even came out and said, "Look, this is not an abortion bill; this is a health care bill." And from all indications, it looks like this will not be in the final bill.
But let's look at the physics of this, okay? And because if members were given commitment based on their conscientious belief that they were going to get that in the bill, don't you think for a moment that they're going to fight to keep it in the bill and will vote against it if it's taken out of the bill, just like women who were aghast that it was put in the bill are fighting to take it out? I mean, we've set up this kind of a push-pull on just an incredibly heart-wrenching, complex issue, and it didn't need to be that way. And frankly, you know, the White House was involved at every step of every negotiation. Mm. They stepped back whenever it was convenient, but you know, they cannot disclaim anything to do with this, because the fact of the matter is the White House was responsible for taking my amendment out of the bill. And, you know, for whatever its reason, that's what happened.
Did they ever give you a reason why the Kucinich Amendment was stripped from the bill?
Yeah, the insurance companies didn't want it.
Right, but that can't be the reason they gave you.
Oh, yeah, that's the reason.
Really?
I was given. The insurance companies didn't want it.
Because the line that the public relations arm of the White House is giving is that if the Kucinich Amendment was in there, then the president's promise that people, if they were happy with their current insurance plan, they could keep it. That if the state they lived in enacted a single-payer plan under the Kucinich Amendment, then he wouldn't be able to keep his promise.
Well, you know what? I'm not going to get in an argument with the President of the United States. I know what the forces were that took this amendment out of the bill. And, you know, I know why we started with single payer being taken off the table right from the beginning. I understand why a robust public option that could have been available to 129 million Americans was shrunk down to 6 million. And I understand why my amendment was taken out of the bill. It's all about the power of private insurers who ended up with a bill where they get $70 billion a year in subsidies, much of it from the taxpayers, where 21 million Americans are forced to buy private insurance, and where people pay twice. They pay either directly or through their job, and they also pay for their taxes. To subsidize the continuation of private for-profit insurance. The wrong business model. It just is. It's they're in business to make money, these insurance companies. They make money not providing health care. Everyone knows that. Why are we continuing with this? What is going on in America where we're subsidizing insurance companies with our health care? We're subsidizing coal and uranium companies with our energy policies. We're subsidizing defense contractors and war profiteers by continuing war. We're subsidizing Wall Street instead of keeping people in their homes and helping businesses stay alive. This is really a turn of events that really calls out for closer inspection and for a broader discussion.
I agree with you. Everything you're saying, I'm sitting here nodding. And yeah, so what is the answer? I mean, where do we go from here?
Well, I think, you know, just from a very narrow perspective, the bill, if it gets to conference, is the place where the changes that we want to be made have to be made. And one is to try to get the Kucinich Amendment back in the bill. Or anybody else wants to claim the amendment and put their name on it, that's okay with me. But get a provision in the bill that shields states from the legal attack that we know is coming for any state that moves towards a single payer. My amendment protected the right of states to move forward with single payer by giving states a waiver from the ERISA law that's increasingly being used by insurance companies to attack city, county, and state single-payer initiative. So, you know, that amendment's really important for the future of single-payer, and frankly, for consumers. Just think about it this way, Nicole. If somebody lives in a state where the insurance companies keep raising the premiums and there's no protection in this legislation from that, then consumers can always say, hey, look, you keep doing this. We'll create our own health system. We'll create a single payer. But if the insurance companies are free to just say, well, yeah, well, we'll trump that. We'll block you in court. That takes away some of the power of consumers. So I want to protect consumers as we move towards a final bill.
Right. And Dennis Kucinich, you are the only member of Congress I've ever heard talk about ERISA, and that is a key component of your Kucinich Amendment, which, by the way, I found the actual text of the amendment, and I've posted it on my blog at RadioOrNot.com so people can read it. And it's a simple four pages, and it's easy to understand. I've had a few people on this show, even before I heard you mention ERISA, a lawyer who's a listener who sent me an email talking about it. He represents people against insurance companies when the ERISA laws give them really sort of no recourse. Can you explain in simple terms what ERISA, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974, is and why this is a barrier to single-payer systems in states?
Well, there's a provision in the bill that relates to multi-party health care plans. And if a state creates its own health care plan, it's seen as being contrary to provisions in ERISA. So what I'm trying to do is just to give states a waiver from that. So states, a process where a state would just be able to have the law, the application of the law waived, so states could go forward without having to worry about ERISA implications. And that ERISA is Employee Retirement Income Security Act.
Right.
So when I was doing research on single payer, I saw how insurance companies are now looking for ways to try to defeat single payer, and they've been turning to the courts using very narrow interpretation of ERISA to challenge city, county, and state single payer initiatives, and there's some big decisions in the offing here, which is why Congress should act ahead of time, and not be in a position where the public will lose the leverage that it should have.
Is there any? Let me rephrase that. If we can get your Kucinich amendment back in the bill, and get rid of the Stupak amendment, is this health care legislation something you could vote for? I know you can't really say because we don't have a final bill yet.
Well, you know, I mean, I was ready to vote for it with all of its flaws, and there's plenty, if there were some consumer protections, but there aren't any.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot, unless we give the consumer some leverage here, all we're doing is giving a big handout to the insurance companies with a gold-plated guarantee of tens of billions of dollars of revenue without regard to doing anything about insurance premiums, co-pays, deductibles. It's a nightmare. But you know what? With a nightmare, let me tell you, if we could get open the door for protection for state initiatives for single payer, you know, maybe you vote, you hold your nose. But you know what? There's no way that I'm going to sell out consumers' efforts to be able to have a fighting chance with these insurance companies and call that and with something that's called falsely labeled reform. I appreciate being on. I hope that everyone who's listening will be able to go to Kucinich.us, sign up. We're giving frequent updates on what the status of the bill and the negotiations are at any particular point. And I want to tell you how much I appreciate everyone in Air America who is so involved in this issue and trying to wrest from the control of these interest groups our government.
Well, and we appreciate you fighting for us because the bill as it stands now we see as a huge giveaway to the insurance companies, and it's not doing what health care reform or health insurance reform was supposed to do. And again, as I said last time we spoke, the Kucinich Amendment was the one shining bright spot in that bill. And without it, it's a huge giveaway. So we also, in addition to going to Kucinich.us, should we be calling Nancy Pelosi's office? What should we be doing?
You know, let's organize together. And I, you know, it, again, this is not just a speaker on this. The White House Mm-hmm. The White House likes to stay, you know, at a distance, but let me tell you, they're very involved, and they were responsible.
Okay.
They were responsible for pulling the amendment. So you might give the White House a shout out and say, you know, we'd like you to help put the amendment back in the bill, and also encourage Senator Reid, who has shown, you know, some willingness to try to work on improving the bill. It's not over. It ain't over till it's over, as it's been said. It's not over. We have to keep in there, and I'll as long as I have the support of people on Air America and my district, I'll keep doing it. So thank you so much. Check out Kucinich.us, and let's talk again soon, Nicole. Thank you so much.